I think sometimes there's this notion of people kind of going solo into a corner, like figuring out the story and like walking out of the room with the story set. And it's really not the way that it worked. You know, the development of a story and the arc is really like a two-way conversation. Like you need the constant feedback because it will help you as a storyteller discover things along the way or even spark new ideas around what you might want to do with some of that story.
Welcome to the IDOU Creative Confidence Podcast, a series focused on building your confidence at work to tackle your biggest creative challenges.
Join us as we learn insights and lessons straight from IDEO and today's most impact-oriented design thinking leaders.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Creative Confidence webcast. I'm Meg Rice, lead learning experience designer. Super excited to have you join us for this conversation. Today, we are thrilled to welcome Anne Kim. She's a senior portfolio director at IDEO, and she's also the instructor of our course, Impactful Presentations. It's a special moment for me, too, because I got to work side by side with Anne building this course, and we have lots of great things to share with you today. So welcome, Anne.
Hi, it's great to be here.
We're going to be diving in to some of the course content we have from Impactful Presentations. And before I tell you anything more about Anne's bio, and there's plenty of great things to say, let's start with an activity. We call this the so what test. So Anne, can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be sharing with us today?
Yeah, today we're going to be talking about story arcs and how to experiment with different ones as you're refining your presentation.
So what?
Because I hope people will leave this conversation understanding how a story is put together and feeling confidence around how to find the right arc for their presentation.
So what?
Well, if you practice trying out these different ways of building a story, you'll get better at finding the one that does the best job of telling the story that you're trying to pull together.
So what?
Well, because telling a good story is the way to have the biggest impact and to get people to really take in what you're trying to say, both through head and heart, and ultimately take the action that you want to inspire them to do.
All right, Anne, you passed the test. So now that we... Now that we've shown you guys a little bit about the so what test, and can you tell us a little bit more about this? You know, what's the purpose? How might we use it? Why is it important?
Yeah, so the so what test is a way to put into words the stakes and the why of your story, right? And so it makes you think about the impact that you want to create and the shift in the behavior thinking that you hope that you'll have with your audience. So it's just a great way to, on the fly, practice and force yourself to articulate what you're trying to convey to your audience and the words that you would use to do that.
Well, the thing I love about it too is, I mean, we were playful. I think if anyone didn't know we were having a little activity here, they might think it's a little bit rude. But when you can establish this norm with coworkers or friends, you know, it's a good way to be able to push back on each other and be like, okay, so what? What is this presentation about? Like, why should I care about it? And that norm of those words creates that space to play around with that idea you're trying to share.
Yeah, I think that comes out in how we actually use it at IDEO. So just to kind of pull back the curtain a little bit, the so what test is really useful, especially when we're putting together a presentation, say, for a client. And as a team, we'll use so what to say, we're going from this page to that page to that page, and forcing ourselves to be really clear about what we're trying to say and why we're saying it, and cutting down any of the excess. I mean, what's interesting is that oftentimes there's almost too much to say, and people want to feel compelled to stuff all the words into their story. But the so what exercise is just one way of pulling that back and really getting to the essence of what you're trying to say.
Totally. Yeah. And I hope all of you feel like you might be able to try this out, get a friend, get somebody you feel comfortable with and give it a whirl. Let us know how it goes. So we've shared a little bit of the fun stuff. And senior portfolio director, instructor of our course, Impactful Presentations. But you also, you know, at IDEO in your work, you are a design researcher. You have background in anthropology and also filmmaking. You have over a decade of experience in journalism and film. And you've been a fellow at the Sundance Institute in the past. In addition to all of that, you've served as the chief design officer for the Surgeon General in the United States. And knowing you personally, I know you love your dog, Carlo. And we might not see him, but I hope he's nearby.
He's going on a walk because I feel like he's going to knock over my microphone. So he's outside.
Good call. I've got three dogs roaming around here somewhere. I've got to keep them out. You know, the other thing I know about you, Anne, working with you is just you have a deep curiosity for people, their motivations, their mindsets, what drives them. And I think this is really funny because one of your little side passions I'm going to share with you all now is that you've got this, you know, like or desire to want to be a matchmaker.
That's true.
true. Which I think is great, you know, for our conversation today in a couple ways. Number one, Anne has created a documentary called Lovesick. It's about matching singles in India who are HIV positive. It's a great film. If you want to see more of Anne's storytelling, feel free to check it out online. And also in terms of matchmaking, I mean, it is, we're going to be talking about story arcs. And we're talking about how do we match the message that we want to share with people with the way we want to tell that story. So you ready to dive in, Anne? Let's get into the details of the conversation.
Yeah, let's do it. I've been looking forward to this all week. So I'm just excited to be here.
Me too. I'm thrilled. So a story arc. What are the parts of a story? And how do those parts of a story relate to the arc or the way we might shape that story?
Yeah, so the way I think about it, and I'm going to pull a lot from the IDEO context, because I imagine that's pretty relevant to a lot of the storytellers who are attending here, where you're thinking about how you storytell within an organization or to a client or to a partner. So I think about the different elements of the story. You have kind of the beats or the things that you want to convey, right? What are the takeaways you want for your audience? The arc comes into play when you think about how those pieces fit together. So the arc, the way I think about it, is often the choreography. So how does this play across time? And how does this play in terms of emotion and where your audience is at as they're experiencing the story? So the arc is the glue to pull all that together. So in other words, it's not just what you want to say, but it's actually how you're going to say it. And, you know, as humans, we're really attuned to story arcs. We might not be able to name them per se as like saying it's this arc or that arc, but this idea that people naturally are attuned to it. So where there's anticipation or where there's this sense of, especially creating empathy is such a huge part of storytelling. And so where you're doing that and how you're leading an audience through that journey is really, really important. And also just knowing, in the course, we talk a lot about knowing your audience as well, right? So where they're coming from, what questions might they be coming with or presumptions even, that you might want to flip in the course of your storytelling. So those are all elements that you just pull together, and the arc is the elegant way, ultimately the elegant way to do that, but it takes a bit of work to figure out what the arc is going to be.
Yeah, it takes some so what's, takes some pushing, takes some pulling. Yeah. You got to get into the nitty-gritty of all the details you have. There's one thing I want to draw a bit of attention. You said the beats of your story, and those are the things you want to tell. Can you just expand that word a little bit for us? What does a beat mean?
Yeah, so the way I think about it is maybe even before you get to the idea of the beat, are what are the elements that you want to convey, right? So some of those things are going to be around the context, right? So if I think about a presentation that we might or share that we're doing for a client, setting the context is really, really important, right? Whether that's in an individual story or the business context in which the work you're doing is taking place, that is really key. So you feel like people are kind of starting from a shared understanding of the space or the landscape. There are also other elements too, like you know, certainly like a lot of the storytellers I'm sure who are attending here, like you have a lot of data points, right? You might have numerical data points or quantitative data points. There are also human and qualitative, maybe more emotional data points. And so those things also constitute what will ultimately become beats in your story. But the beats are really like the inputs into the story. That's a simple way to think about it.
Great. Super helpful. And so we want to get those beats. And then once we have them, we can think a little bit more about the arc, right? How we might want to arrange them and string those things together. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yep, that's right. The beats are the blocks and the arc is the way that you pull those things together.
Wonderful. So let's get into a few examples of common story arcs. Maybe some we might be more familiar with, you know, like you said, we might not be able to name them, but we've all experienced them, right? So what are some common story arcs we might use or we might have experienced or heard in the past?
Yeah, so I mean, with one, you know, we talk about some of the elements of context, conflict, climax, closure, the sort of the four C's, that's one type of arc, where you can think about how you're creating, how you're taking people on this broader journey, right? You from this way of the research input, for instance, becoming some of the context, the insight being about the conflict, or maybe the insight is also about the tension or the way that that might subvert some of the assumptions. So that's one way to think about conflict. And then the climax is like, so therefore, here we are with the solution of what might be the proposal or the pitch that you have around something that you're doing, and then the resolution of those things. So, and that's like thinking about the vision of the future. Now, there are ways to flip this, right? Because sometimes people will tell the vision of the future story up front, and that might actually look like a different kind of story arc in how you might do this.
Great. And I love that point, too, about that you don't have to necessarily like put the vision at the end. You know, I think the important thing about this might be just knowing the pieces that you should look for.
Yeah. I'm also thinking, like, you know, there are story arcs that you can borrow from kind of dramatic storytelling. For instance, like the hero's journey is another one of those. But this idea of, you know, you follow a character essentially as they're going through this journey, and the ways in which, you know, they come in with perhaps a certain kind of assumption, and that changes as they're going through some sort of experience, and then it resolves at the end of the journey. One I really love actually is Van and Hull. And so as we were putting the course together, I realized Man and Hull is actually the way that we describe the process or the emotional journey of going through the design process. So when we're often talking to collaborators, we'll have a visualization of these are the different kind of parts of the design process. You go from insights, you go to synthesis, and then you start generating ideas and prototyping. And you're starting kind of at the beginning, you're going into a little bit of a high, everything feels good, optimistic, and then you run into trouble. And in trouble in kind of the work of innovation can mean actually a lot of ambiguity. And that's when the emotion starts going down. And so we often refer to this trough that clients might feel as we're working together, where things just feel really uncertain. You're sort of like, where are we going with this? And then there's clarity that emerges actually as things become more tangible. So it's really interesting to think about the ways in which these story arcs are super, super flexible.
Which is great because, you know, sometimes when we tell stories, we might be just really focused on the data, what happened, when it happened. But what's great about this is to think about that emotional journey as well and how it felt at different moments. Because like you said, we do have an affinity for arcs, and this is what draws us in to the information we're hearing and the stories we're told. So just stepping back, we've heard a little bit now about the shapes of stories, different story arcs, why they're important. I want to get to that moment of finding that story. You know, you've done this in a professional context, both, you know, here at IDEO with the work you do, but also in filmmaking. And I know we were working on the course. You shared with me two different methods that you can use to find the story and find those beats or those elements or blocks you need to include. Can you share those with everyone, those two methods?
Yeah, so I will say from the outset too that these methods are not mutually exclusive. So I kind of toggle between these different modes of finding the story. So one is actually what I call like turning over every stone, where you look at all the data, all the interviews you've done, or all the reports that might come in, and you just totally immerse yourself in that. And you feel like you don't want to miss anything, right? Anything that might be insightful. So that's kind of one modality of finding your story. The other is to actually take a step back, maybe rely a little bit more on your intuition, your gut, which is to reflect and say, what are the 3 to 5 things that are the most important or standout moments in telling this story? So oftentimes, you know, at IDEO, we're telling the story of the evolution of ideas, like where that the inspiration from end users who we've spoken to, and then as we're going through the process of designing and iterating, getting feedback. As you reflect on that journey, there are definitely, you know, times 3 to 5 things that might stand out, and those become kind of the major beats of the story. And it's actually, in a way, the combination of the two. And I will say, in the first one of turning over every stone, sometimes that's actually just more about my own feeling like I've done due diligence around all those different pieces and feeling more confident about, yes, actually from that soup, these 3 to 5 things feel right. Or from that soup, being able to pull out some other moments that I might have missed otherwise. And then I have the set of beats to work with from there.
I feel the same way when I do working. I want to make sure I have everything, but there is that moment you get to the point of like almost trusting your process, trusting yourself and the impression that different moments like made on you. And I love how you say it can be that combination of both that gets you to a really solid place.
Hey there, it's Ko here. I hope you're enjoying the conversation. Are you curious to know a bit more about IDOU? We're an online school where anyone can solve anything creatively. If you'd like to learn to craft more human-centered presentations, I'd love for you to join our course, Impactful Presentations. In it, you will learn how to deliver presentations that spark a shift in beliefs, how to create a meaningful connection with your audience, and my favorite, you'll be able to expand your skills by practicing a range of unique presentation methods. Check it out at IDOU.com/present. Now, back to the conversation.
So, beats, story arc, finding the story. We've covered a lot of ground. Like, tell us how you've used these tips and techniques in your real life at IDEO or in some of maybe the films you've made. Share with us some of your experiences.
Yeah. So I'll take the film that I worked on as an example. So this was a story about a doctor in India who's a matchmaker for her HIV positive patients. And this was a story that also was captured over years. So it presented a different kind of challenge in terms of being able to go back and turn every stone, watch 250 hours of footage, and then sort of find the story, which is what documentary filmmakers often talk about. The story is, you know, follows a somewhat linear path because that made the most sense in terms of some of the matchmaking with some flashbacks in between. But one of the things that we did in the film was actually create kind of chapters to section the film out in different ways to provide a little bit of breath for the audience, but also to be clear about how those different sections kind of pulled together. And so one thing that we did was put these title cards in the film that spoke to some of these unspoken cultural rules around expectations of marriage. So for instance, like the film opens with this, with one of these rule, these marriage rules that in India, for instance, marriage is a must. And so it was really interesting to see that how that worked for, and we had very different audiences, like in the US, for instance, for much of the audience, it was sort of a new learning to understand the cultural stakes. In India, it was interesting when we played there, was that people actually found it really entertaining because they were like, yeah, you put words to things that are sort of unspoken or just implicitly understood. And so that was a way to just create some structure and an arc that supported multiple things in that story. But another example I think I can think of that takes that sort of idea is some work that we did recently with the Department of Mental Health for the state of Massachusetts. And so this is something that's that we can share as well, where the team made a video that really illustrated or took the audience on the journey of what it's like to be a parent trying to figure out what's going on with your kid and like whether or not you need to go and get, you know, find a therapist or if there were other ways to get help. And so this was a story that had a similar kind of structure, kind of arc, but using the each beat was actually a snippet of audio recording from a parent. And so that was, in some ways, it's that kind of storytelling that I love most, where you're actually pulling together like different voices into a very, very simple arc.
And what I hear in both of these stories is we're giving ourselves a structure, right? And I think if we think back to those common arcs that we shared a little bit ago, those are there, you can play with them. But really it's about finding the structure and how you can provide that information, it seems like with some sort of emotion, either a curiosity or something funny, like I didn't thank you for giving us those words, or parents sharing those personal stories. And I think just for a moment, I mean, this isn't necessarily what we commonly see in professional presentations. And we normally see a lot about the information and the data and what we have to talk about. And so why do you think it's important to have these human stories and to have these real emotions interspersed with the information you need to share?
Yeah, it's a thing that's really common, for instance, with clients where a lot of the data that they have is really quantitative, right? And so part of what storytelling allows you to do is actually either get to the why behind some of that data and also just provide a sense of what this means experientially for people, right? What this lived reality is, or what their reaction might be to, say, a new service idea or product idea that you might be putting out into the world. And so it is, to me, like you have that, the quantitative data is a kind of evidence, but the human stories are also a kind of evidence. So it's not just like a feel good, right, to do this kind of storytelling. It is actually a really important data point. And so those two things, though, together can make for really, really powerful storytelling. So in the instance of the work that we did for the Department of Mental Health, you'll notice that when you watch that video, it does not start with any stats around kids who are at risk for mental health crises or stats around waiting times. I mean, those things are somewhat known, but we didn't want to bog down the video with that kind of information because that information was going to be in the context of the site. We knew that. This was really purely about moving people's hearts to open it up enough so that there would be more investment in some of these other more tactical pieces that we wanted to be able to design and move towards. So you have to sort of see these elements as like parts of an interconnected system of storytelling that will move people. Ultimately, you do want to move people to action. What different kinds of stories and evidence are going to help move people in the direction you want them to go?
And I mean, I totally believe you. I buy it. I'm with you. So how do we convince the data people that story matters? maybe if they're very analytical, we're talking finance, we're talking, you know, government regulated industries, and they want the hard data. What techniques do you use then?
Yeah. So one thing is acknowledging that that's what feels like evidence to your audience, right? So the hard numbers, like, so a really good example of this is I do a lot of work in our healthcare practice. And so this is exactly that space that you're describing. People who are working in a space where it's like needs to be evidence-based, where it's highly regulated. And it's been interesting to see actually the ways in which some of the storytelling that we do at IDEO has really resonated. And so it is not to say that we're not looking at those numbers, but we say those numbers are actually really great as context. And so if we bring to life kind of new ideas, part of the storytelling here is to say, hey, this is what it would look like from a human experience side. And this is what the ramifications will be from a business side. And so it's telling those different stories in parallel that become really critical. So one example of this is we actually worked with a hospital called Newton Wellesley Hospital, which is a hospital near IDEO Cambridge. And so ultimately the goal there was to make the hospital more innovative for business reasons, right? To stay competitive and also think about employee retention and so forth and patient experience. But the means to actually doing that was through kind of prototyping that made for really good storytelling, essentially. So we made a mini documentary of that process. So in the telling of that process, we were also seeing kind of the hearts and minds change of the people, some of the hardest people to convince, frankly, like including surgeons who were part of the prototype. And so if you can lead people to see how the numbers pieces, say, works with some of these things that might be perceived as softer, that's a total win-win. And that's really what we try to do. It's not to the exclusion of those things, but really thinking about how you storytell so that it's complementary.
Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, the tagline we have for the course, right? Information alone will never move people. And so it's, we can't exclude the human stories and only include the data. But to your point, we have to know our audience. We have to know if they really want that data, how do we elevate it and then pair it, right? And where do we sequence that data in with our entire presentation? Shifting gears a little bit, I want to talk about how we might prototype or practice with different story arcs. This is an area in our course where some learners struggle a little bit to play around with that structure and sequence. So tell me a little bit about how you prototype a story structure or a story arc and some of the pitfalls you've seen.
So part of this is just about doing this with a spirit of experimentation. I think the idea of first draft being your last draft, you just kind of have to abandon that and get into a mode and headspace where you're like, okay, I'm just going to try this out, right? It's not about getting it perfectly right from the beginning. It's just about going through the motion of trying it. One of the things that I've noticed and is at both at IDEO and outside of IDEO is that people often default to telling stories in a very linear way. So it's like, first this happened, then this happened, then that happened, versus thinking about it in terms of some of the arcs that we talked about, which is, you know, setting context or coming in the middle of a story with a bit more of an aha at the top, and then kind of telling maybe the story of the project journey in a bit more of a flashback. So that default to linear is something just to recognize. When I'm going through kind of the process of telling a story, I do that myself, where it's sort of like, and if sometimes it's helpful, especially if, you know, a project has been taking place over the course of months or even years, to look back and say, these are the things that happened. And then to kind of stand back literally in the room and say, okay, I'm going to circle this one, this one, this one, because those were the moments, not just for me, but for the team and for the clients, that were really critical turning points. And so you can extract those turning points and use those as the beats that you start creating that story.
And are there any like tools or maybe, I don't know, physical ways in which you might do this? Do you do a slide deck? Are you on paper? How do you play around with these different things? Because you said your first draft is not your last draft. We got to get rid of that. So what do we do in between?
Yeah. So actually, I mean, some of this is about what works for you as the storyteller. And so, you know, growing up in film, like a lot of, it was very common to put things down literally on an index card. I mean, there's software that does this now, but when I started, that was the way that you did it. And so you would write down on an index card of like what the scene was and what the takeaway was and put them literally on a wall. You can use color coding too, depending on, you know, which characters are involved and that kind of thing. But you then move those index cards around, and that's actually an easy, lightweight way to start playing with it. And that's, I think, something that's really key here is like, you don't want to get so invested at the top where you're like, no, I put, you know, days of work into this particular prototype of the store and feel like it's going to be it. You have to just do it in kind of in a lighter way where you feel like it lets you to just be a bit more loose around the structure. So that's one technique that I love using. Another though, honestly, is just using slides. So when, you know, we use Google Slides and that's an easy way to collaborate. What I'll sometimes do is actually just go in and give each slide a label, which is like, here's what needs to be said here. Here's what I want the takeaway to be. And then I'll go back and kind of flesh it out with the details with images and some text and all that, but at least gives me a sense at the beginning of what I think the arc might be. And it gives something for people to react to as well. Cause all of these things too, is it's not just like, I mean, there's some storytelling I do solo, but there's a ton of storytelling that's really done collaboratively. And that's where it gets really fun.
Yeah. And one thing I'll add to this conversation around prototyping a story and playing around with story arcs is, you know, when I'm writing courses or when I have to do any of this work myself in a presentation, something I'd like to try and do, and I don't know if you have this experience as well, is like put it down with the arc I think might work and then really intentionally try to shift it and be like, okay, to your point earlier, what if I put that vision up front, right? And because you might feel good about the arc you have. You're like, this works. I think this will resonate and it aligns with what I want to tell and the right emotions. But there's always that question I personally have of like, what happens if I change it? Could there be a better one? Is that something you experience as well?
Yeah, totally. And as you're doing that too, of finding the right arc. So two things. One is it's helpful to force yourself to share it with people because there's just a different way that the story comes to life as you're doing that. The other thing too is that you may discover that there are certain beats that you just don't need that are really extraneous or that should nest under a bigger point that you're making. I mean, that's actually a very common thing that I've noticed as well. And in addition to the linear aspect is kind of what we would call story beat hierarchy, right? It's actually not this, it should be this way around. So you lead with this and this becomes kind of the sub bullet. And so part of the challenge, but also what makes it so fun is that there are all these different elements that are in play as you're messing with the arc. But that's part of the point of doing the exercise of trying these different arcs, because you can see what's extraneous or what needs to get flipped around.
Yeah. And when you're close to the story too, I mean, the hierarchy can be hard to tell, but also you might just personally really like a certain beat. And I think when you put it into that skeleton structure and play around with that, you can see, maybe I don't need that one. Maybe I can cut that one. Now that we've been working remotely for so long, how have you and your teams that are more distributed now used different tools, right? We can't be with sticky notes on boards anymore in the studio. We can't be in person with index cards. So what tools have you been using to help facilitate that collaboration?
Yeah, so we use a set of whatever tools are one you feel comfortable with to allows multiple users in at one time. That's sort of the criteria. So Google Docs, Slides, things like Miro boards or Figma, like those are some of the tools that a lot of teams have been using. And what's kind of nice is, you know, we don't have the shared experience of being in a room, but what we do have is actually looking at a screen together. And so when you're in a board like that, you could have both discussion, but also just heads down time, right? Where you could do an exercise where if it's a team that's trying to tell a story, do an exercise where for 20 minutes, you go heads down, put on some music, and everybody gets 7 post-its and they write down on those post-its, digital post-its, write down on those post-its what they think the beats are, or what the major turning points or most memorable moments were in a project, for instance. Like that's one way to quickly experiment with how you identify some of those early beats. Then you could do another session later where it's then, once you've kind of converged on what the beats are, where you're putting them into different sequences and trying different arcs. I especially love things like Miro boards where you just sort of have infinite space. And so you can try this thing over here and then just scoot over to this part of the screen over there and try something else. So it feels a little bit more like a digital playground and it allows you to get a little bit more free form with this.
So, I mean, building on that, there's just one thing I want to click into a little more. So if you have that collaborative moment, and I love, you know, this answer is Mira had a question too about how do you engage people to participate and surface those beats without turning over every stone. But when you have all these different stories that get generated collaboratively, then what do? Because there's very often not one right way to tell a story. So then how do you move collaboratively towards a collective understanding of what the story should be?
Yeah, this is where actually trying out different ways of storytelling and getting feedback becomes really key. So part of this is like, what are the constraints or the process you do you want to create for yourself? So let's say it's a team of 5 people and you've clustered the different beats, you've identified those, and you say to yourselves, okay, we're going to try three different story formats. Like Meg, you're going to lead with this one, and you're going to lead with this one, you know, so-and-so, you're going to lead with that one. And just try that out and see what works. Because in that experimenting kind of in solo mode and then coming back and sharing in a circle, what's working, what's not, like that actually is a way to help refine the story. And I love this idea of doing it collaboratively, because I think sometimes there's this notion of people kind of going solo into a corner, like figuring out the story and like walking out of the room with the story set. And it's really not the way that it works. You need, you know, the development of a story and the arc is really like a two-way conversation. Like you need the constant feedback, because it will help you as a storyteller discover things along the way, right? That of things that are working, things that aren't working, or even spark new ideas around what you might want to do with some of that story.
So we've got 2 minutes left. That means I get the last question.
Okay.
And tell me, what's inspiring you these days? Where are you pulling new fuel from?
Yeah, so this is a question I ask myself every day, actually. I have to be honest, the living in the era of this pandemic has been really hard to find inspiration. Because when we're in the studio together, it's so easy because I'm so inspired by everything that's happening right around me. So a couple different things. One is actually just getting outside has been super inspiring. But also, I'm somebody who really loves to travel. And in lieu of travel, it's harder to do right now, I've actually just been immersing a ton in books. I read a lot of articles, but reading books it felt like a luxury, actually, the last 9 months, 12 months that we've been in together. So I have a few books that I've been really drawn to. And part of this actually has to do with, and I've noticed actually my pattern is that they're books from different cultures. And so it also means that there are different ways of storytelling around that. So I really enjoyed going in deep to particular stories, just as a way of transporting me, but also keeping myself sharp as a storyteller and thinking about how these different stories have been pulled together. And, you know, these in the written form, but also even just like, you know, all of us watching a ton of movies and shows and stuff like that. But it's been so inspiring actually to see how much creativity there is in that space.
Well, I think we're under a big constraint right now, right? And so that is going to breed some creativity. We're going to get new stories and new forms of storytelling. And, you know, and I'm really glad to hear that you've been leaning more into books, me as well. And thank you so much for all the insights and the tips you shared with us today. I want to thank you all out there for joining us. We sincerely hope this has been useful for all of you. For those of you who'd like to learn more about presentations that are both meaningful and memorable, I encourage you to check out our course, Impactful Presentations, where Anne is an instructor. And you can learn more about that at ideou.com/present. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Creative Confidence from IDEO-U. Stay up to date on our Creative Confidence conversations and send your questions for our upcoming guests. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, and sign up for our IDEO-U newsletter at ideou.com/CC. Thanks for joining us.